Good evening and welcome to the KRFP Evening Report for Tuesday, December 13th, 2016. I'm Lee Robartis of the news tonight. U.S. Representatives McMorris Rogers and Labrador meet with Donald Trump. Columbia Generating Station delivered waste 7 times more radioactive than reported. Idaho Interim Legislative Committee considers education funding changes. And Moscow Committee considers IT cooperation agreement with Pullman. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report, but first, world headlines from Feature Story News and the Pacifica Radio Network.
Scientists say the world's largest herd of wild reindeer in northern Russia has fallen by 40% in 16 years due to human activity and rising temperatures. These developments are causing the animals, which live in the Taimyr Peninsula, to change their annual migration patterns. The Arctic Center at the University of Northern Iowa says other wild reindeer populations have also experienced a substantial decline.
President-elect Donald Trump has announced ExxonMobil's CEO Rex Tillerson as his choice for Secretary of State. Vice President-elect Mike Pence welcomed the choice.
Couldn't be more grateful that someone of Rex Tillerson's proven leadership and accomplishments been willing to step forward to serve our nation as our next Secretary of State. He, along with General John Kelly at the Department of Homeland Security, I think represent the caliber of experience the American people are coming to expect from the cabinet coming together around our president-elect.
Tillerson has never held public office and doesn't have any experience in foreign relations. Senate Foreign Relations Committee member Democrat Ben Cardin said for that reason and more, he's concerned about the nomination.
His ties to Exxon and the ties to Vladimir Putin are going to be matters of tremendous interest during confirmation. We want to make sure that the Secretary of State's going to put the United States' interests before economic commercial interests of a private company or as it relates to other issues. So these are important considerations. We also are concerned about his statements on climate, and that's going to be an issue that I think will come up during confirmation.
Florida Republican Senator Marco Rubio also serves on the closely divided Senate Foreign Relations Committee, which will hold hearings and a vote on the pick. Rubio said in a statement he has serious concerns about Tillerson's nomination. Two other Republicans, John McCain and Lindsey Graham, have also voiced concerns. None has said they would vote against him. Senator Bernie Sanders has spoken out against Tillerson. Sanders said in a statement, not only is Mr. Tillerson a pal of Russia's authoritarian leader, Vladimir Putin, but he is the head of one of the largest oil companies in the world. In this appointment, Mr. Trump is making it abundantly clear that the short-term profits of the fossil fuel industry are more important than climate change and the future of the planet. Very sad, very dangerous. Mr. Tillerson must be opposed, Sanders said.
Environmental groups point to ExxonMobil's role in spreading climate disinformation. An internal report from company scientists 40 years ago pointed to carbon emissions from burning fossil fuels as a cause of climate change, but ExxonMobil hid the report and funded research promoting climate change denialism. Meanwhile, the U.S. Senate Foreign Relations Committee plans a closed briefing and a public hearing on the Russia hacking of DNC servers and possible electoral issues as soon as the Senate returns from its year-end recess in the first week of January. This according to Micah Johnson, spokesperson for the panel's Republican chairman, Senator Bob Corker.
Meanwhile, Donald Trump has reportedly chosen former Texas Governor Rick Perry to head the Department of Energy. Perry, who has twice run for U.S. president, once vowed to abolish the entire department if he won the White House. If confirmed as DOE head, he's expected to reshift the Department of Energy's focus back to fossil fuels away from renewable energy sources.
Perry does not acknowledge that human activity is causing global warming, saying the science isn't settled. Perry met Trump yesterday at Trump Tower. Trump's reported pick for the sprawling Interior Department is Washington Republican Kathy McMorris Rogers. Dozens of prominent climate scientists will join with indigenous leaders and environmental justice activists in a rally to defend science against attacks mounted by the incoming presidential administration and Congress. The rally will take place outside the meeting of the American Geophysical Union in San Francisco. Climate scientists and others are concerned Trump is filling his cabinet with prominent climate change deniers with close ties to the fossil fuel industry. His transition team has circulated a questionnaire seeking Department of Energy employees' views on climate change, an unprecedented move that has been called a witch hunt.
Donald Trump has chosen the president of Goldman Sachs to be his top economic advisor. The president-elect named Gary Cohn is director of the National Economic Council, despite repeatedly criticizing the firm during his campaign. FSN's U.S. correspondent Lorna Shaddick reports.
Gary Cohn has been with Goldman Sachs since 1990 and rose up through the ranks as a trader alongside the firm's CEO, Lloyd Blankfein. His appointment to head up the National Economic Council had been expected since last week and comes after another Goldman alumnus, Steve Mnuchin, was recently chosen as Treasury Secretary. It comes as Donald Trump has postponed his first press conference as president-elect until January. The event had been scheduled for this Thursday, when Mr. Trump was set to address his plan for dealing with potential conflicts of interest stemming from his businesses.
Authorities in California's San Joaquin Valley say a Bakersfield police officer answering a report of a man with a gun shot and killed an unarmed 73-year-old as he stood in a neighbor's driveway. The man's family says Francisco Serna was in the early stages of dementia. He had no gun.
Rebel resistance in the Syrian city of Aleppo ended today after years of fighting and months of bitter siege and bombardment. Insurgents agreed to withdraw in a ceasefire from the tiny portion of the city they still held. Rebel officials said fighting would end this evening. They also said they would leave the city for opposition-held areas of the countryside to the west. News of the deal was confirmed by Russia's UN envoy, Vitaly Churkin.
The vast majority of former members of the illegal armed groups that have handed themselves over to the authorities as a result of the amnesties, having gone through the procedures, returned to their families. Now, the most important thing, the counter-terrorist operation in Aleppo will conclude in the next few hours. All militants, together with members of their family and the injured, currently are going through agreed corridors in directions that they've chosen themselves voluntarily, including towards Idlib.
Churkin spoke at a United Nations Security Council emergency session called by France. France and other Western powers denounced the reports they'd received of Syrian soldiers and allied Iraqi militia fighters summarily shooting dead 82 people in recaptured East Aleppo districts. Samantha Power is the U.S. representative at the UN. She denounced what she called the starve and slaughter tactics of Syrian President Bashar al-Assad and his Russian and other allies.
We call on Russia and Assad to allow impartial international observers into the city to oversee the safe evacuation of the people who wish to leave, but who justifiably fear that if they try, they will be shot in the street or carted off to one of Assad's gulags.
The Syrian army has denied carrying out killings or torture among those captured. Russia said rebels had kept over 100,000 people as human shields in Aleppo.
United Nations Chief Ban Ki-moon says he is alarmed about reports of atrocities against a large number of civilians caught up in the fighting in Aleppo. The UN and aid charities are urging the Syrian government to allow safe passage out for those remaining. Spokesperson for the UN High Commission for Human Rights, Rupert Colville, says at least 82 civilians have been killed by pro-government forces.
Yesterday evening, we received further deeply disturbing reports that numerous bodies were lying in the streets, but residents were unable to retrieve them due to the intense bombardment and their fear of being shot on sight. In all, as of yesterday evening, we have received reports of pro-government forces killing at least 82 civilians, including 11 women and 13 children.
Iran's President Hassan Rouhani has ordered the head of his country's atomic energy organization to start planning the development of nuclear-powered ships. Rouhani says this is in response to what he calls a U.S. violation of the landmark nuclear deal Iran signed with world powers. FSN's Rachel Silverman has the details.
Iran has ordered its scientists to start developing systems for a nuclear propeller to be used in marine transportation. Experts say that would likely require Iran to enrich uranium to a purity above the maximum level set by the nuclear deal Iran reached with the U.S. and five other world powers in 2015. Iran's president says the work is in response to the U.S. Senate's vote this month to extend the Iran Sanctions Act by 10 years. The 2015 nuclear deal lifted a variety of sanctions against Iran in exchange for restrictions on the Iranian nuclear program. Rachel Silverman, San Francisco.
A Tunisian man is facing 18 years in jail after being found guilty for his part in the sinking of a boat carrying hundreds of migrants off the coast of Libya. At least 700 people are believed to have drowned in the incident. Only 28 people survived. Most of the victims are believed to have been from Mali, Gambia, Senegal, and Ethiopia, and had been trapped in the hold of the heavily overcrowded fishing boat. A Syrian man also faces charges in relation to the tragedy.
A court in Uganda has remanded King Wesley Mumbere to prison after fresh charges, including terrorism, were brought against him. The traditional leader was arrested last month following clashes at his palace in western Uganda, where more than 60 people were killed. Hilary Isinga reports from Kampala.
King Mumbere's appearance before the magistrate lasted less than an hour on Tuesday morning. According to Mumbere's lawyer, the king faces robbery, attempted murder, and terrorism-related charges. He was arrested on November 27th in a joint operation by military and police. During the deadly clashes at his palace in western Uganda, more than 60 people were reportedly killed. Some of those were police officers and the king's royal guards. Mumbere was later taken by police hundreds of kilometers to eastern Uganda, where he was charged.
Serbia's prime minister has cut short a visit to Brussels after accusing Croatia of blocking his country's bid for European Union membership. Aleksandar Vučić cut short the visit to the EU centre after Croatia raised concerns about Serb treatment of its Croat minority. Deep divisions remain between the countries following the fighting in the 1990s during the breakup of Yugoslavia.
Two men involved in the November 2015 Paris terror attacks have been killed during a U.S. coalition airstrike in Syria. Pentagon officials confirmed the men, Salah Gormat and Sami Djidou, were members of the so-called Islamic State and were plotting more attacks at the time of their death. Our U.S. correspondent Patrice Howard reports.
Two men linked to the Paris terror attacks that left 130 people dead were themselves killed by a coalition airstrike on December 4th. Pentagon spokesman Peter Cook also confirmed a third man, tied to a failed terror plot in Belgium in 2015, was also killed in the strike in Syria. The three ISIS militants were reportedly plotting more attacks against Western targets before their death. Cook said the coalition has successfully targeted five ISIS plotters since mid-November, helped by intelligence material collected in the territory formerly held by the terrorist group.
According to media reports, German authorities believe there are at least 4,500 followers of the far-right Reichsbürger movement in Germany. Its members claim not to recognize the authority of the federal government, as FSN's Iris Spitzer reports from Berlin.
The Rheinische Post newspaper published its report based on information from the interior ministries of Germany's 16 states. There has been renewed concern about the Reichsbürger movement since one of its members shot and killed a police officer in October. The Reichsbürgers deny the existence of the current German Republic, claiming it is still occupied by Allied forces, run by a company, or simply illegal. Many hold far-right viewpoints and are hostile to foreigners. According to the report, more than a third of the movement's estimated 4,500 followers live in the southern state of Bavaria. Ira Spitzer, Berlin.
The Spanish government has announced its plans to go back in time, changing its clocks to GMT or Greenwich Mean Time. FSN's Europe correspondent Elena Casas has more.
Spain was on Greenwich Mean Time until 1942, when dictator Francisco Franco decided to switch the clocks in line with Nazi Germany. Supporters of a clock change argue it's been on the wrong time zone since, meaning Spaniards finish work too late, usually after seven, and spend too much time in the office. Unions say going an hour back in time will mean a better work-life balance, and now all the main political parties agree, meaning the measure is almost certain to be approved by Parliament.
Turkey jails more journalists than any other country in the world, according to a new report by the Committee to Protect Journalists. Free press advocates say after this summer's failed coup, the Turkish government has tried to suppress reporters. FSN's Europe correspondent Kevin Ozebek has more.
The Committee to Protect Journalists says out of the 259 journalists who are jailed around the world, 81 of them are behind bars in Turkey. Turkey has ranked low for press freedom in the past few years, but observers say the government led by President Recep Tayyip Erdogan has cracked down especially hard on the press after a coup attempt this summer. Since the summer, the government has shut down dozens of media outlets. Also, President Erdogan has led a purge of the private sector. More than 100,000 Turks have been suspended from their jobs. More than 30,000 have been arrested. The government has been targeting people with suspected ties to Fethullah Gulen, a cleric in exile in the U.S. who President Erdogan claims masterminded the coup. The U.S., though, says there is no evidence to extradite him.
A trial is underway in Indonesia's capital, Jakarta, which sees the capital's governor accused of blasphemy. Basuki Dahaja Purnama, a Christian of Chinese descent, cried as he denied allegations he insulted Islam. The leader, who is also known as Ahok, is the first non-Muslim governor of Jakarta for 50 years. The case is being seen as a test of religious tolerance. The prosecution say Mr. Purnama insulted Islam by misusing a Quranic verse to boost support ahead of February's governorship election. Russia and India are due to begin naval drills in the Bay of Bengal. At least three ships from each side are reported to be involved in the exercise, as FSN's Julia Lubova reports from Moscow.
The drills come after an agreement was reached at the meeting of the Russian-India Intergovernmental Commission on Military and Technical Cooperation. The meeting was chaired by the Russian Defense Minister and his Indian counterpart on 26th of October. In July, spokesman for the Russian Ministry of Defense's Eastern Military District said that the Russian side will involve a Project 1155 anti-submarine destroyer, a Project 956 fleet destroyer, an anti-submarine helicopter Ka-27, a tanker and a fleet tug. India is set to introduce a Kashin-class destroyer, a covert, a tanker and a helicopter in the drills. In September, joint Russian-Indian military drills were held in Primorsky Krai in Russia. It involved a Russian 5th Unit of the General Troops, an Indian Unit of Motorized Infantry Guards Battalion. The first Russian-Indian naval exercises were held in May 2003.
Cuba has signed a deal with American tech giant Google to improve connectivity speeds to Google services. The U.S. company will install servers in Cuba in a deal with the communist nation's state-run telecommunications company, Itexa. The deal comes in the final weeks of Barack Obama's tenure as U.S. president. Earlier in the year, President Obama restored relations with Cuba after more than 50 years of hostility. It's not clear if President-elect Donald Trump will change course.
For Pacifica Radio, I'm Eileen Alfandary.
I'm Christina Onnestad.
From Feature Story News in Washington, I'm Rebecca Foster.
In London, I'm Catherine Drew.
And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. The Washington Department of Health has temporarily banned nuclear power plant operator Energy Northwest from sending low-level radioactive waste to a commercial disposal site. Federal regulators say Energy Northwest shipped a cask of contaminated filters from the Columbia Generating Station at Hanford to the disposal site that was 7 times more radioactive than indicated on the shipping manifest. The Nuclear Regulatory Commission will send a 3-member inspection team to the nuclear power plant near Richmond this week to examine the plant's waste shipping procedures. The Columbia Generating Station is the only operating commercial nuclear power plant in the Northwest. One of the men who pled guilty to conspiracy in the Malheur Wildlife Refuge occupation in Oregon has asked to withdraw his guilty plea. Joseph O'Shaughnessy is awaiting trial for his role in the Southern Nevada standoff near the federal land occupied by rancher Cliven Bundy. O'Shaughnessy's attorney, Tony Schwartz, said the guilty plea in the Oregon occupation was part of a plea deal in the Nevada case, which fell apart. And because of that, he has asked U.S. District Judge Anna Brown in Portland to have his guilty plea withdrawn. 2 out of 10 defendants who pled guilty to conspiracy in the wildlife refuge standoff earlier this year have also asked Judge Brown to withdraw their pleas because the first batch of wildlife refuge defendants who opted to go to trial were found not guilty by a federal jury in October. Brown has yet to rule on Eric Flores and Ryan Payne's motions. Republican U.S. Representative Kathy McMorris Rogers of Washington's 5th Congressional District held another meeting with President-elect Donald Trump yesterday, but the transition team has not announced a decision on whether she will be the next Interior Secretary. Several national newspapers cited transition sources Friday, saying McMorris Rogers would be the pick. After she left Trump Tower in New York City, McMorris Rogers told C-SPAN, "We talked about a lot of things. I walk away reminded that he's a man of action. I'm very enthusiastic about his leadership. He's rethinking federal agencies. He really wants them to work. His approach is ahead of time and below budget, and I see him bringing that to the federal government, which is really welcomed." Republican U.S. Representative Raul Labrador of Idaho's 1st District also met with Trump yesterday. The Lewiston Tribune reported Labrador said after the meeting he discussed with Trump how to better manage federal lands and unlock natural resources. Labrador said, "He and I agree that we need to listen to the people closest to the land and restore multiple use for the benefit of all Americans. I remain confident that the president-elect shares our values and that his administration will be a friend to the people of Idaho." There's no indication yet whether Labrador is under consideration for an administration post. Both McMorris Rogers were not enthusiastic about Trump during the Republican primaries. Labrador supported Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky early in the primaries and then switched to supporting Senator Ted Cruz of Texas after Paul dropped out. During the last 2 weeks before the national election, Labrador was the opening speaker for Trump rallies in Utah, Arizona, and Florida. A report from the Idaho State Office of Performance Evaluations found programs in Idaho's public schools are not being funded based on need or cost. According to the Associated Press, state evaluators released the report this week, which also said the state is lacking data on the total amount of money spent on 22 of the state's school district and charter school programs. State evaluator Byron Welch told the Joint Legislative Oversight Panel, "Many of these individual formulas for these programs were established many years ago, and there's just cause for them to be revisited as needs within schools have drastically changed within that time." Totaling over $165 million for fiscal year 2017, the programs include literacy proficiency, gifted and talented programs, and academic advisors. However, teacher pay and discretionary funding, which make up the majority of the $1.5 billion state education budget, were not reviewed by evaluators. The report was created to help the legislature's Public Education Funding Interim Committee, tasked with reforming how public education is funded. According to the report, nearly every one of the 22 programs under review have had unclear and obscured information on total costs because school districts and charter schools are not required to report on total expenditures from state funding. There also is not a uniform way to report program spending. According to the report, 40% of students receiving special education were not included in the funding formula for special education in violation of state law. The report said legislators and other stakeholders cannot look to published revenue and expenditure reports for a complete picture of how much money was generated by and spent on behalf of students receiving special education services in districts or in charter schools. Reporting mechanisms, some driven by federal reporting requirements, have not been set up to capture the complexity of the funding system. The Pullman Police Department has budgeted $10,000 to purchase a police drone. Pullman police want to begin using a quadcopter next year, but due to the city's more than $112,000 in capital improvement projects, they must wait until 2018. The projects include station repairs, a crime scene mapping device, a police station remodel, and an additional patrol car. Also, the city is asking department heads for further ways to cut expenditures, which are expected to exceed revenues by about $1.1 million in 2017. Pullman Police Chief Gary Jenkins told the Daily News he's been talking with the Renton Police Department about drone use and how to attain Federal Aviation Administration approval to deploy a drone. Jenkins said possible uses for the drone include mapping traffic collisions, monitoring emergency situations, finding people in structure fires, monitoring SWAT operations, and use in search and rescue operations. Jenkins said this can, in many cases, do the work for a number of personnel. It's an eye on things we can't see from the ground. Jenkins also said city officials will seek public input before any purchase is made. He said, "We will get public input on the use of the drone, just like we did when we installed cameras at Adams Mall. There is a balance here for right to privacy and legit law enforcement use." A group of Washington State University professors, department chairs, program directors, associate deans, and others have issued an open letter asking students and others to think about open-mindedness, inclusiveness, and sensitivity. The letter, noting more than 700 accounts of harassment and bigotry nationwide, read in part, "These passive efforts and rhetoric invariably lead to a culture that accepts and tolerates bigotry and harassment, a campus culture that hides behind tolerance and discourses of free speech. Undeviatingly creates a campus that is especially disempowering to marginalized students." The professors say encouraging open-mindedness and sensitivity is not enough because of today's political climate. Distinguished Professor of Education and WSU Faculty Chair A.G. Rudd said since the presidential election last month, intolerance has risen and there has been a spike in harassment incidents. Rudd pointed to the defacing of a gay student's car with painted homophobic slurs and people ripping hijabs off of Muslim women's heads. Rudd said, "We need to be as vigilant as possible to speak out and be proactive, not reactive, and show people WSU can be a place of welcoming and openness to all students and offering them comfort and support if they feel they've been harassed." Washington State University student Jason Guerin told the Daily News he has seen a change in attitude since the election and blamed both sides. Guerin said there is a new sharp divide on campus. However, Guerin said he is not convinced the incidents actually occurred, in particular the defacing of John Krause's vehicle with red paint and discriminatory slurs about his homosexuality. Student John Krause published photos of the painted slurs on his car on the internet, and those pictures were published in local newspapers. Rudd is asking if any student who feels harassed or discriminated against should report the incident to the Dean of Students' Office and, if necessary, to WSU Police as well. The Moscow City Council's Public Works and Finance Committee yesterday recommended the full council approve an intergovernmental information system services mutual assistance agreement with the city of Pullman. The agreement spells out the responsibilities and expectations of each entity when requesting or responding to a request for assistance. City Information Systems Director Jesse Flowers told council members the agreement does not have any monetary value and does not obligate either city to do anything.
We've recently leased a fiber over to Pullman to facilitate data communication over to WICOM for dispatch and radio traffic. With that additional capacity, we have a lot more opportunity to help each other. And we're both similar-sized organizations doing a very similar function. And part of the goal, we've had several meetings with Wayne and their staff about how can we help each other and what expertise can we lend when we need it. So this agreement doesn't give any obligation to do anything or any costs associated with it. It just is merely putting in place a framework that we have the appropriate responses and authority to respond and help people when we need it. You know, if there's an outage or just working on a project that we have an expertise or they do, we are easily able to come over and give us a hand. We're anticipating potentially moving ahead with potentially storing our offsite backups at each other's data centers or various other tools where we can use that link and provide a better quality of service for both cities.
That was Moscow Information Systems Director Jesse Flowers speaking at yesterday afternoon's Public Works Finance Committee meeting. The committee will put the agreement on the consent agenda for next week's City Council meeting. Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather forecast for the Moscow-Pullman area. Partly cloudy tonight, low 8 degrees. Wind chill values as low as 6 below zero. North winds 6 to 8 miles per hour becoming east after midnight. Increasing clouds tomorrow, high 25. Wind chill values as low as 6 below zero. East winds 10 to 15. On Wednesday night, 100% chance of snow. New accumulations 1 to 3 inches possible, low 17. 40% chance of snow on Thursday, cloudy, high 24, new snow accumulation less than half an inch possible. 20% chance of snow after 10 p.m. Thursday night, cloudy, low 14, 20% chance of snow Friday, mostly cloudy, high 14. 20% chance of snow before 10 p.m. Friday night, partly cloudy, low 1 below 0, mostly cloudy and cold, high around 9 on Saturday. Currently at the Pullman Moscow Regional Airport, overcast, 23 degrees. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscast you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on KRFP, be sure to become a member of KRFP. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students and low income. You can mail your memberships to KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. That's KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. Or you can go to the KRFP website to find out more ways to help KRFP. KRFP is not broadcasting on FM today and possibly into tomorrow or maybe Thursday due to technical problems at the transmitter site on Paradise Ridge. We continue to live stream on the internet, and this newscast and every other evening report will be archived on the KRFP website shortly after broadcast. Coming up next on the live stream, Making Contact, our weekly documentary, Flashpoints, the daily investigative news magazine from Pacifica Radio at about 6:33, and then we'll have music throughout the evening. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman. I'm Lee Robartis. Jim Roach assisted with tonight's newscast. Have a pleasant evening. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman, community radio for the Palouse at 90.3 on your FM dial and online.